Hello and welcome to the Medicine Matters Diabetes Podcast. I'm Eleanor McDermid. The DIRECT trial, published in 2017, was the first large study to show that remission of type 2 diabetes was within the reach of people in primary care, without the need for bariatric surgery. The trial's success hinged on its commitment to at least 3 months in which participants followed a total meal replacement plan of just 800 calories per day, with the aim of losing at least 15 kilograms. But this diet, which neatly fits the dictionary definition of a crash diet, went against the received wisdom of the time as to how people should safely and successfully lose weight. Alison Barnes from Newcastle University was the dietitian on the DIRECT study. I caught up with Alison at the height of the COVID-19 lockdown, so she was at home, and you may notice the occasional contribution from her rescue dog. When I spoke to Alison, I was surprised to find that she had, at least at first, been very sceptical about the DIRECT diet plan.
So I came from a background as an NHS diabetes specialist dietitian. So working in weight management as part of that as well. So I had worked in diabetes actually since I qualified as a dietitian, as a mature student. And I've had diabetes myself, but type 1 diabetes since the age of 8. And I kind of, you know, it just makes you really aware of the value of understanding it and understanding, you know, what's happening inside the body to make it make sense in terms of the advice that you're being given. And I was working in that when the original research came out from Newcastle University. So the counterpoint study that Professor Taylor had run with the 11 participants. And I genuinely, my reaction at the time, I was in the diabetes dietitian office in a hospital up the road. And I remember saying, for goodness sake, everyone's going to want to do this ridiculous diet. And, you know, we know that weight loss helps with diabetes. And why is this any different? And I spoke to, you know, I was doing clinics in primary care, and I spoke to quite a few people who came through the door asking about it. And we were discussing, you know, it was really good results, but it was a very small study, and it didn't have follow up. And, you know, 800 calories really isn't very many. And how would you manage to do your everyday job? And there was one patient who he said, yes, I understand all of that, but I'd really like to give it a go. And so we ended up with a halfway house of it was a 1200 calorie food based diet. And he went off, followed all the advice, had a few reviews, and came back after the 8 weeks. And I remember seeing his results and just realizing kind of then that it was completely different actually from the normal results that we see. And it wasn't a bit of a reduction in his HbA1c level. It was completely back to normal. And I, you know, that for me was that made me actually stop and think. And I thought, I'm going to look into this a bit more. And some colleagues had similar experiences as well, because, you know, when we were in the local area, and with it being a Newcastle University study, there was a lot of coverage about it and a lot of interest from people who had diabetes, which is all really positive. You know, whenever you've got someone who's motivated and wants to do something about it, you know, we need to support that.
That's so interesting, your initial reaction to it.
Well, yeah. And I think, you know, and I still see that with a lot of practitioners, this, the kind of, you know, you're so used to this idea of type 2 diabetes being a chronic progressive condition. And also the idea that, you know, rapid weight loss is not the best way to keep weight off. And in actual fact, when you look at that, when you go into the literature and review it, that isn't what the literature supports. What it does say is that, you know, the more weight that people lose within the first 6 months really of an attempt to lose weight, that tends to result in more weight loss, more weight being kept off over the longer term. And specifically studies that have looked at the weight of regain, there's no difference whether people lose weight rapidly or quickly. So those kind of things that tend to, you know, just come as a normal part of the conversation, it's a bit of reevaluating that to really reflect what the evidence shows to best support people. But yes, you know, I always had the impression, you know, a quick fix is never going to be the answer. But I think the whole idea of directing this approach is that it's not a quick fix. It's very much recognizing the low calorie diet might be a more rapid weight loss, but the bits that come after are equally important. And that's about, you know, we essentially create a blank slate with the low calorie diet where we've removed all of the foods. Now that has various advantages. So part of it is knowing, you know, that people are going to take in very few calories while they're still getting all of the nutrition that their body needs. But part of it as well is about the behavior side of things and being able to break habits. You know, so kind of snacking in front of the TV or having a biscuit whenever you have a cup of tea, it kind of, those are easier to break when you know you're just having a diet of soups and shakes. And it can also be quite a relief for people who have a complex relationship with food to just be able to open a sachet and mix it up and have that rather than having to think about how much to eat and what to eat and all of those things. So that has its own advantages, but then it can be the most anxiety promoting time is coming then to the reintroduction of foods, especially where people have lost weight maybe many times before and then regained it, which is a, you know, we'd all recognize that as being a cycle that lots of people go through. So that part is about really taking that blank slate of the diet and giving quite clear supportive advice about, you know, what foods to eat, how to make a meal in the right proportions and with the right balance of foods, and doing that gradually so that people can, you know, if they chose to add in their evening meal first, they would get their heads around the types of things they would eat for their evening meal before we then added in a second meal and took away another shake. So that was a gradual process as well. So and then the maintenance, obviously, you know, weight regain happens and this is not about saying people will get down to that low weight and they will just keep it there and everything will be happy ever after. That would just be daft. But what it is about is that the ongoing support is there to try and help people to recognize the reasons why that might happen, to be able to anticipate them and to put plans in place, that's hard to say. And then also, you know, if it does happen and life throws something up, actually we as part of the weight maintenance had what we called a rescue package, or if you think of it as a weight reset plan that would allow people to have some time back on the shakes or a mixture of shakes and foods, just to reset their weight back down. And you know, learn from that if we could. But you know, sometimes, you know, we had all participants, we had an awful lot of really serious life events that happened. And I think it's, you know, it's not reasonable during that time to expect people to be focused completely on, you know, their diet and their weight. And that's just the way life is. And so it's recognizing that is a normal part of the process. And it's not, you know, it's not the end of the world, but if the support is still there, then we can catch it before it ends up in a total weight regain and just be able to reset it again. So all of the stages are important, despite the fact that, you know, yes, it does use a low calorie diet initially.
When you're talking about people regaining weight and when they're back on solid foods again, and you can give them the option to go back onto the meal replacement plan, do you see any problems with them sort of effectively yo-yo dieting, I guess you could say?
Yeah, I mean, the idea of a yo-yo diet is based around what I mentioned before in terms of losing weight, however much it is, and then regaining it all back and potentially more on top of that. So the idea with the maintenance part of Direct was to catch that early. so that it may be regained, but it's not a complete rebound to where people were before, where you've got to start all over again and pull it right back. So it's more of a fluctuation in weight. So the amount of weight regain that would trigger the option of being able to do a reset was, you know, it's a good few pounds. So it's a couple of kilos for an option to do a mixture of food with the shakes, and 4 kilos, so you know, 8-9 pounds for the option to go back on the shakes entirely. So it's actually, if anything, it's taking people off that trajectory where they would have yo-yoed and gone right back up. And it's recognizing that you know, the idea that it will stay steady is unrealistic, and that people understand that they will fluctuate. However, that because we're encouraging people to be monitoring either, you know, their weight or their belt size or, you know, whatever it is at home, and they have a point, which is a kind of trigger point in their head, that they know it's time to take action and pull it back. And that's what, you know, research tells us is one of the things that makes the difference between people who maintain their weight and people who regain weight, is that there's a trigger point where you say, okay, a bit of up and down around this point is fine, but actually if it goes too far, something's going to have to bring it back. So that's the approach that we were trying to take within that. But you know, I think as with any research study, we've not solved the issue of people regaining weight, and it's still something that requires more input, more research, potentially different strategies for the maintenance part of it. But I think, you know, we incorporated as much as we knew at the time for the things that would be helpful. Another one of those was to be able to continue with one meal replacement a day, which some people opted to do throughout the duration of the study. So they would replace one meal with a meal replacement, and that was an option as well.
So when you get to the point of reintroducing solid foods, do you work with the people to try and figure out what eating habits it was that caused them to put on weight in the first place and try to address those?
Well, there's various parts of that. So we've tried to partly look at that even while people are on the shake. So although we're not talking about food, because that might be, you know, that's not fair really when people are trying to avoid it. What we do look at is times where people might, you know, the usual way of describing it is something like cheating or breaking the diet. And that's not really helpful. What it actually is a sign that someone's eaten something when they hadn't planned or really wanted to. And those times stand out more when people are just having a liquid diet. And again, it's about how it's treated. So it's going back and saying, do you know, we'd really like to know about those times, because we can have a look at what was going on and what it was that led you to have something to eat. And you know, sometimes it's not a big deal, and it's just, you know, it's been a really one-off experience. And sometimes it's things like understanding that boredom is a trigger, or stress is a trigger, or foods being out on the bench is a trigger that meant someone wasn't able to resist. And all of those triggers are still going to be there when people are back to normal eating, but they won't stand out as much. So we can learn from that during the low calorie diet stage. The transition is about that part really is about the fundamentals of portion size and types and food choices. But absolutely, yes, once we move into the weight maintenance stage, it is about understanding what's happening in people's lives. And so a big part of every appointment is thinking about planning ahead. So you know, before you come next time, is there anything coming up that it would be helpful to think about how you prefer to manage it, or anything that's going to be tricky. So, you know, if someone's going out for a meal, you could have a look at the menu at the restaurant they're going to and think about what they might like to order, those kinds of things. And then when people come back, it's about reflecting on what's happened since the last appointment. And, you know, if everything's gone to plan, great, but quite often it won't. And again, it's just revisiting that and saying, you know, is there anything that we can learn from it and maybe put some plans in place if it were to happen again. So it's all about that, really. So you know, low calorie diets in the past were used as a standalone measure, and that was lose the weight and you're fixed, you know, and everyone regained the weight because they hadn't learned those things. So this bit afterwards is, you know, you could argue it's the most important part to keep that ongoing support.
Where do you find the challenges come during the weight maintenance phase?
For me, I think the biggest challenge is there are some things that are really quite practical that can be, you know, portion sizes creeping back up over time. And that's just a case of recognizing that and resetting it. I think the biggest challenges for the people undergoing it is where emotions and eating cross over. There's not a great deal of support around this beforehand, unless, you know, things like binge eating are very, very serious. There's not very many services that people can access, but emotional eating and comfort eating is really common. And it's really common in people who have type 2 diabetes. And it's, you know, in those circumstances, food often gets treated as a problem, and that, you know, don't have a chocolate bar, have a piece of fruit. But what that doesn't recognize is that food is helping someone cope with something else. And quite often people haven't really sat back and thought about that. And so it is part of, you know, if it's about stress, if it's about being bored, if it's about being lonely and food is helping you, it's not food that's the problem, it's the stress or the boredom or the loneliness. And so it's kind of almost, you have to go back to what was triggering the eating and be able to say, is there potentially a different way of coping with that that wouldn't necessarily mean that you used food to do it? Because it is one potential solution, but so often it then results in feeling guilty for having had it. And, you know, that's not helpful then with stress. And so the understanding of why people eat is a really big part of it. And I think that is when people, you know, are dealing with all sorts of life events, it's so easy to go back to what you know, which is food being something that helps you to get through it. And I think that's where the biggest challenges have come and the biggest challenges that people face, because they are longstanding relationships with food that do take time to work through, you know, if they can be worked through. I really think, you know, more help for people to have support around that is a gap in provision of support for weight management at the minute. I think it's, you know, it's done perhaps with a light touch. There's not that many services, as I said, people can be referred into. It's something I think that would help so many people to not feel guilty about, yeah, breaking a diet, or, you know, to really understand their relationship with food and get some support. Yeah, so we, you know, it's part of our program, but there's only, you know, we're delivering a weight management program in primary care. We're not psychologists, you know, it's about, you know, that what we are able to provide and support people with. But I think, you know, we still, and I spend a lot of time trying to say to people, it's not cheating. Try not to think of it as cheating. It's you know, but those things are so, you know, they are used so often in line with dieting and weight and things like that, that it's, you know, it's for all of us really to recognize the language around that, and that, yeah, You know, saying someone's cheating is skipping over the problem. Willpower is another one. I would have a swear box for cheating and willpower. they're both completely ignoring what's probably really going on.
You were speaking earlier about people in clinical practice being really keen to try the counterweight diet. So did you get that same sort of enthusiasm when you were recruiting to the DIRECT trial?
Because I was a diabetes dietitian beforehand, quite a few of the GP practices that we ran the study in were the same GP practices that I'd done clinics in. And what I will say, hand on heart, is that yes, the people who came to the appointments, so everyone within the practice who met the inclusion criteria received a letter. And they chose whether to respond and say yes, they wanted to take part, no, they didn't want to take part, or they just didn't respond at all. And our response of people who said yes, they would was 28% of the population that had the invite. Now, in a typical diabetes trial in primary care, you get a 5% uptake, which is, you know, may well be those very, very motivated people who want to help out in research, etc. So it was quite significantly higher. What I would also say is the people who came through the door were very much the same people that I was seeing in my usual clinical practice.
So what do you think it is about this DIRECT diet that got the number of interested people up from about 5% to 28%?
Well, when people came through, we for their initial appointment, we did ask, you know, what was it that had you know, that made them want to take part, and in preparing for the study, we were asking, you know, what do you think the advantages would be? Are there any downsides that you can see? And for a lot of people, this was to do with medications, so not wanting to take as many medications. For some people, they had had family members who had had problems as a result of diabetes. For some people, it was around just having diabetes and the potential to be able to put it into remission. And then for some people, it wasn't so much about the diabetes at all, but it was about the opportunity to be able to lose significant amounts of weight. And I think that is where that the low calorie diet is also filling a bit of a treatment void, because what we had at the time, and certainly locally, we had lifestyle interventions, which are typically commissioned for 5% weight loss. And that's, you know, in terms of diabetes guidelines, that's really what we were using, that 5% weight loss could have a clinical benefit in terms of glucose levels and blood pressure and lipids. And yes, it can. But what it isn't, it's not enough weight loss to induce remission for the vast majority of people. And so the next thing really for people that was more intensive was to referral for bariatric surgery. And there wasn't anything in between those for the vast majority of people. And so that, you know, that it's something different from kind of the eating healthy advice seems to have been something that brought people through the door. But, you know, this the message about remission, we're all more familiar with it now, partly because of DIRECT, but that was something completely new at the time as well. So I suppose if you're looking at it from that point of view, you can understand why people would be interested. But I've had conversations with people about the weight loss and the low calorie diet, and they just don't feel it's for them, or you know, that you really have to talk even at the start about changing habits longer term, because it's not worth someone putting themselves through a low calorie diet for 12 weeks if really they're going to just go back to what they were doing before, because they'll end up, you know, back where they were before. And then in that case, you're probably better at looking at, you know, small changes, manageable changes and steps that people can achieve. But I think by having that conversation, you can decide together if it's something that that feels appropriate. I would say, you know, never underestimate the motivation of your patient population. Have the conversations, because there's an awful lot of practitioners who fed back to me as well, that now they're having these conversations and they're really, you know, it's really positive in terms of what people are achieving, and they're coming back and they're really pleased about it. And that's really nice as a practitioner as well. You know, it's positive on both sides of the table, that, you know, you go from my experience was, you know, talking about weight management, advising people to lose weight. But this is people, you know, coming through the door wanting to achieve significant weight loss. It's a really positive thing.
Thank you to Alison and Dog, and thank you for listening to this podcast produced by Medwire News for Medicine Matters Diabetes. Please subscribe for more, and don't forget to visit diabetes.medicinematters.com for news, expert opinion, and practical advice about caring for people with diabetes.